Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Lyn Worsley, our human condition guru, joins us for our weekly segment. I'm really interested to ask, as you've been listening to Lindy there, for your reflections on some of the stuff that she was saying.
Oh, Lee, I'm sort of overwhelmed. It's amazing interview and seeing how she... hearing how she's actually responded with such a forgiveness in her heart, and it's really genuine, and there's this beautiful, beautiful woman.
She's clearly worked through it in great depth.
Yeah.
And I've kept saying this week there's much to forgive.
There's much to forgive, but what was really interesting is she's moved to this zone where she can let the people own their wrongs.
It's a big step to make.
A big step, yeah. And she's really that. I love that notion that she's not inviting them into her head.
It's like inviting someone who hates you into your head.
Yes. And I just found that I'm going to sit on that for a while. It's beautiful, and I just hope I one day can manage that myself.
Yep. Well, the podcast is going to be up on our Open House Community Facebook website tomorrow, so send the link around because it's one of the highlights of the year, and she'll be in the next Open House book, I'll tell you.
Oh, yes.
So last week in our Human Condition segment, we kicked off a new series of conversations, Lyn, about developing ourselves, covering identity, self-image, what others think of us. Tonight, how it all ties in with eating disorders. We've had quite a response on our Facebook page tonight. Just take us back last week. Set the scene for developing ourselves.
Okay. Now, we looked at the concept of how we see ourselves and how the concept of ourself and how we think of ourselves. And I went through that there's three parts or three ways of looking at yourself. You can look at yourself as the ideal. So that's the self that's perfect and ideal in every single way. And then there's the ought self. And that's the person that you think of yourself that pleases everyone, that ticks the boxes and ought to do this and should do that.
Yes.
And then there's the best self. And that's who you are when you're at your best.
Like firing. Yeah.
Who you are when you're good enough.
Yeah.
And there's often some difficulties with our self-development when we see that there's a big discrepancy between who we see ourselves when we're good enough and how we can see ourselves as the ideal.
Yes.
Now, if the ideal is unobtainable, we tell ourselves that we are at our best. When we're at our best, it's really not good enough. And if we have self-talk that goes along like that all the time, it can actually go into all spheres of our lives.
It's the power of that self-talk. Mm-hmm. So this week, and I've been surprised that this emerges out of developing ourselves, it's another place for this whole issue, and that is eating disorders. How does it relate to the development of self?
Now, the subject of eating disorders is a complex one because it's not necessarily the eating disorder that is the problem, but the eating disorder is a symptom of a much deeper issue. And the deeper issues usually relate to the need to control something coupled with a very poor sense of self.
Okay.
The need to control something can come from experiences where a person's had little or no control in their life and they need to feel that they can do something about their situation. And this might be from having a traumatic event in their life where they witnessed or experienced a sense of helplessness, or it might come from a perception that they've got no control. So again, they're experiencing some helplessness. It also might come from a perception that they're not good enough and nothing they do makes a difference. Mm. It's again a sense of helplessness. But this could be fueled from a very high ideal self, which is unobtainable, just like we've talked about last week.
So they expect too much of themselves.
And that's where the ideal self is the only goal and the real self is just not good enough.
Mm.
So the complexity of eating disorders is even more so when the body is malnourished. So the brain finds itself in a situation where it then selectively feeds part of the brain that are functional, like breathing and moving, and it then it avoids those parts because it's trying to conserve energy or nourishment. It avoids the parts that are rational and that, the rational thinking and the learning parts. And so we basically have those parts of the brain getting malnourished.
That's amazing.
And we end up with a development of a faulty thinking process.
Mm.
Now, this faulty thinking process generally appears as a faulty feedback mechanism. And that tells the person that they're, one, not good enough, two, that they're fat or ugly or something's wrong with them. And they actually do see themselves as much bigger or ugly or distorted than they really are. Mm. So the complexity is that the eating disorder itself is self-perpetuating, and it makes the person have a sense of helplessness, even though they're trying to gather some control.
I think it's probably worth getting you in this context. If you can define eating disorders, so we know what we're actually talking about.
Okay. Now, eating disorders can show up in various forms.
Yeah.
Now, there's a common form, which we hear about the most, and it's the most obvious, is anorexia nervosa. Now, that's when a person starves him or herself to lose weight, and the loss of weight becomes an obsession. So they might exercise more, eat less in order to lose weight. But as they do lose weight, their moods become fragile, and they withdraw from others who stop them from doing the behavior, and they end up with a distorted view of themselves and a malnourished brain.
Yeah.
Then there's anorexia bulimia. Now, that's where a person will binge eat, and that's when they, you know, eat lots and lots of food at once, and they eat it, and then they make themselves sick so the food doesn't get digested. But this too becomes an obsession, and they'll often go to the bathroom or to be sick or have a shower to disguise them being sick after every meal. And it becomes a ritualistic pattern, and the mood swings associated with the frenzy of eating, if you can imagine eating so much with a frenzy, and then a disgust after that that comes with, you know, having eaten so much that they then have to throw up.
Yes.
That leads to really horrible feelings of helplessness again. But it's less obvious because they don't have the huge weight loss that happens with anorexia nervosa. And so they can still run the brain to malnourishment, but it doesn't happen as fast. But it, over a longer period of time, it tends to happen.
So out of those two disorders, what's the most common one?
The most common one I couldn't really tell you because I think what happens is that we see anorexia nervosa in hospital. We don't see anorexia bulimia in hospital because it goes undetected.
Yes, that's a good point, yes.
And then there's body dysmorphic disorder, which is still part of the anorexias. And that's where a person has a particular part of their body that they become obsessed with, and they spend most of their thinking trying to cover it up or disguising the problem. And these obsessions can be about anything on the body, from skin colour, freckles, pimples, shape of their body, you name it. The plastic surgeons, man, they make a lot of money out of these people.
Yes.
But the obsession can result in taking to drugs to enhance their body. So eating excessive protein food to build their muscles or exercising heavily or even using chemicals to change the body parts that they're worried about. Now, avoiding nourishment and balanced foods, again, leads to the brain being malnourished, which again has an effect on how the brain perceives itself.
Because physically, medically, scientifically,
yes,
the brain is a big consumer of energy.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And it selects where the nourishment will go.
I've never heard that before. That's an amazing thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, another eating disorder, which has recently been recognised and is now listed on the new psychiatric diagnostic manual, is, you ready for it?
Yes.
Avoidant Restrictive Food Intake Disorder, ARFID.
Okay.
I just think they sit around and think about these things.
Yes.
But these are the people who eat only a very narrow range of foods, and those who restrict their intake to cope with difficult feelings and emotional crisis and an unpleasant experience, for example. But they also suffer from malnutrition. These people often have allergies, and they can't have this and they can't have that and they can't eat at certain times. But they suffer from malnutrition, and they have complications that are associated with impairments to their digestive function, their thinking patterns, and their moods. A very simple change in the brain is the restriction of carbohydrates, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bit of a common diet at the moment, and that leads to no grains in the diet. Now, grains are a source of the B group vitamins, and they help stabilize moods.
How amazing.
So the result is depression.
Yeah.
And depression has distorted thinking, and it moves people away from others, and we then have the beginning of a much bigger problem.
Yeah. So can I hone in on this? You're saying that eating disorders are either caused by the brain's distorted thinking, or the eating disorder causes the brain to become distorted?
Both.
Yeah, yeah.
So both of those occur, and at present we know that by the process of malnutrition during the developing years, the sense of self is restricted. And there's often, and it's often lost in those years of development. And even when the eating disorder occurs in later years with older people, the distortion of the self can continue for years later.
Wow.
You see, we see ourselves through a number of lenses. Firstly, it's through how we see, how we hear and experience a sense of ourselves through our own experience. Then it's also how others see us, and we get that mirrored back.
Yes.
And whether they like us or they're pleased with us or whether we're useful or annoying. So both the messages we get for ourselves along with the messages we receive from others interact.
Mm.
And we develop a list of characteristics that determine who we are. It's a bit like in the past I've talked about the center of the donut.
Yes.
But you can't find out who you are by yourself. It's always in relationship with other people. And when we find out, that's where we find our true selves. So the feedback back mechanism that we get within relationships establishes who we are and how we see ourselves. When there is trauma or a sense of being helpless, however, the natural tendency is to withdraw and protect ourselves. And this mechanism is what triggers the brain to think of starving or controlling food to get the body to a place where it's ideal.
Mm.
And this distortion of course, then leads to behaviours that damage the brain and can result in a person starving themselves to death. So the alarming thing, though, in all of this, Lee, is that eating disorders can and often do result in death.
Yes. Yeah.
And we're actually talking about an illness with dire consequences. So we really need to be very diligent in the recognition of the disorder and the treatment as early as possible.
So of all the treatments and all the theories, what is happening with the treatment of eating disorders now?
Look, there have been many treatment approaches
yes.
over the years, and some are good, some are not. What we know is that the person with the disorder needs to have a sense of control and a clear sense of themselves. And that's really hard because you end up fighting with that all the time. And if you get the person early in treatment, you have more effect and they're likely to manage to distract their need for control over things, and that's less harmful on the body. But the person with an eating disorder, the treatment comes in two phases. There's the eating phase where they need to be fed and nourished again. And then there's the phase that addresses the changes in their sense of themselves.
Yeah.
So helping them to get a clear sense of who they are from both others and themselves is really the therapeutic part.
We want to cover treatment a little more next week. But for now, just to wrap, have you got a practical example of how you've seen this actually work through?
Now, here's a story of a young girl that I can tell you, in her early 20s, who had an eating disorder.
Mm.
She had what you call anorexia eating disorder, not otherwise specified. It's like they sit around and make up these acronyms.
It's another one, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But she'd had it for 9 years.
Okay.
And it began with a simple diet from a miserable 14-year-old who'd always been concerned about her weight and thought that if she could just get thin enough, then things would be okay. It soon turned into something much more serious, and it was fueled by lots of years of depression, anxiety, self-doubt and loathing, self-loathing. And everything she did came from a feeling that she was both at the same time too much or just never good enough.
Okay.
And her life was ruled by fear. But after many years of being sick, she finally gave up trying to get better. And then she honestly thought she wouldn't get better, and that she'd rather be dead. But then she didn't really want to die. So she had this dilemma. She actually wanted to live and she wanted a life. And then she realized that she couldn't live with her life with one foot in her eating disorder and one foot out. So at that point, she had to make that decision. And that was the point that she rang up and got some treatment herself.
Phew.
Yeah. But 9 years of that. And she said one of the key things that she found out during the period of time of her treatment, she found out that the feelings she feared and that she ran from so much were just that. They were just feelings. And in themselves, they weren't capable of hurting her, at least physically. But it would, in fact, pass. So she started thinking of those feelings as temporary. And she learned in therapy to just sit with and observe her feelings. And she wrote that she observed in a very long journal. And that was, it was an overwhelming experience just to write them down. But it was the beginning of a healing process for her, and she began to get stronger and stronger each day. Now, therapy was long term, but it also helped her to understand herself and to love herself. Now, when I think of this practical example, I think it lies in each of our own lives. Someone with an eating disorder is not a freak. They're simply someone in trouble, and they're just like you and me. And yes, it's like a path of thinking that each of us is capable of.
Yeah.
Once you're on the path of thinking that you're not good enough or not the ideal and not doing what you ought, you run the risk of thinking towards someone with a disordered sense of self. And I believe that if we believe that we're made by God, each of us individually is different and unique, then we need to be aware that God doesn't make mistakes. So none of us are a freak. None of us are disordered. All of us are loved and created to be in that relationship with God and with other people. So to have a sense of your own true self, we need to embrace who God made us.
Yes.
And I think of that quite often, just sitting with God and contemplating who he is and just enjoying his presence and knowing he actually enjoys sitting with us because he made us. So we don't have to try to do anything for him in that process. But someone with an eating disorder, that is a really big step.
Yeah.
To just sit with God and let God be and let God enjoy us. No mirrors, no shoulds, no self-talk that says we're not good enough. Just being who we are and celebrating with God who that person is. That's the place where healing occurs.
What wonderful observations. He doesn't make mistakes.
No.
He's on our side and loves us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lynn Worsley, thank you so much. We'll return to this and look at treatment options, especially next week.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Look forward to it.
See you then.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.